The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
In today's college football, 29 can equal 1. That kind of math really isn't good for the game. Chuck Oliver Show on a Wednesday. And yes, in today's college football, not your daddy's, there was a commercial campaign, an ad campaign, I guess late 80s, and they would have famous like adult and child pairings, I guess, and it was "This Ain't Your Father's Oldsmobile." I remember they had Priscilla Presley on there with Lisa Marie Presley. And in 1980, I don't know, Dan, find out when that commercial, 1989, You know what college football's math was in 1989? 1 equaled 1. Chuck, what are you talking about? When I say that 29 can truly equal 1, that is the number of games that a college player in a normal situation without unusual things, not being on even a national champion and whatever. In today, I mean literally, today on January 11th, 2023, do you realize there are multiple examples across college football of what I am about to tell you? 29 equals 1. That is the number of games a college player in a normal situation could have played in to this point in his college career and have used only one season of eligibility. Now, seems there's a pandemic that hits the world about every century. What was the Spanish flu? Was that 1918? Then we got the pandemic in 2020. So once a century, I don't know. You got to make the best of the situation. I don't know. I threw my arm out a window and looked at somebody I'd never seen in my life. I was like, yeah, jab me. Go ahead. Times, they call for measures. So the way we get to 29 is, let's say you are a true freshman in 2020, and the number of games played, Alabama played 11, Ohio State, I think, played 5, and they're like, yeah, you're in. By the way, the rule was 6, and they remember Michigan. Do you remember the intrigue? I love college football. I love sports. You know what? They're begging out of the game so Ohio State won't have the minimum number. And then the NCAA is like, yeah, we're good, 5. Or playoffs or whoever. Yeah, playoffs changed it. But you could have played in a very normal, not unusual in any way. You could have played in 10 or 11 games in 2020. Then last year, and by the way, none of that counted. Then last year, you play a full complement, let's say 13. Do you know what we're up to now? 11 in 2020 that didn't count at all. And so last year, you were considered not a true freshman. Do you remember the kind of unsavory term we came up with? Super seniors. Now, that's kind of a cool term. I'm a super senior. That means I have a 6th year that I'm choosing to use because of COVID. I'm a super senior. Do you remember on the other? I was a COVID freshman. Oh, snap. Yeah, I got playing time galore because, I don't know, I passed the test. Or we didn't give the test. You know, whatever. I asked a high school coach, and it's been 2.5 years now. Dan, I don't know, statute of limitations. Welcome back, Dan, by the way. We're going to talk to him next segment. Back at the end of the 2020 high school season in Georgia, and it was with a playoff team, and I kind of looked over there. I was like, it's amazing that, you know, a local high school, a 2A school with no budget for anything, they got all their kids ready to play. Whereas, I don't know, the Alabama Crimson Tide, where they've got budget enough for everything, it's like, yeah, we're testing, and man, we're missing the head coach now too. I was like, is it don't ask, don't tell? He's like, no, it's don't ask. He said, I don't want to hear about it. If you got a sniffle, he's like, I don't want to hear about it. I was like, okay, well, since it's in the rearview mirror, can't do anything about that. But that's just how he chose to approach. Don't ask, don't tell. No, don't ask. However it worked in your team situation. Could have played 11 games. Couple of programs played more, but I said in a normal, we scheduled 10 and desperate for bowl games, and so yeah, we played 11. And then last year you played the full bore, the regular season and then a bowl game. Well, that's 13. Okay, well, that's 24. Chuck, you came up with 29. Oh, well, I came back and redshirted this year. So I played 4 regular season games, and then the week, I think it was the Wednesday before the bowl started, NCAA was like, yeah, you can play in a bowl game, doesn't affect you. If you have played 4 games already and your team was holding you out, now you know who that might have penalized, but life ain't fair and it doesn't need to be. We're talking about a game. A coach who had purposely held out a player from the 4th game planning for the bowl, and he's like, wait a minute, I did what I was supposed to. But the NCAA recognized the bigger picture was, well, regardless of what you intended to do, there's a lot of teams looking around going, we don't have enough players. LSU played the receiver at quarterback last year because they didn't – Nussmeier had already had his 4 games. So you could have played the whole season in 2020, didn't exist. You played 4 games last year. You played your full slate last year. You played 4 games this regular season, and then the bowl game, that's 5. That's 29. There are multiple examples in college football. You've played in 29 games. You've used 1 of your 4 years of eligibility. Now, there are extreme cases at the far end, and I usually try to and I'll label them as such. I don't want to, you know, like tilt it with an outlier. But a player at Alabama that has done that? Do you know how many games? Kid could have rushed for 100 yards in every game. Could have got an interception for a return in every game. Could have blocked a punt or kicked a field goal literally in every single game. Do you know it's possible if you were a freshman on the Alabama team in 2020? You could have played in 31 games to this point. You used 1 year of eligibility. This math will work itself out of the game almost totally by the spring practice of 2026 in 3 more years. Now, the reason I bring this up is there was a clip we played yesterday, and I want, David, if you could bring up the Stetson Bennett, Kirby Smart talking about his son crying and Stetson Bennett. There was a clip we played yesterday that I thought was kind of funny. Now, I also recognized in the moment what it was saying. But I thought it was kind of funny, and there has been some commentary either about this clip or just the general situation since. David, please play this from yesterday.
Andrew's bawling, and I was like, oh, no, somebody's hurt his feelings. Somebody's thrown him down. Somebody's done something to him. I said, why are you crying? You're going to ruin my moment. He said, Stetson's leaving. Stetson's gone. I said, he's 25 years old. He's got to go. He's got to leave.
So that was Kirby, and that was kind of a funny moment. And I could remember back when Chris Winkie was a rookie. Remember, he went and played baseball for like 5 years, and then he went to Florida State. And he was drafted He was 29 years old. I think actually his rookie season, he was 29 years old. That's an extreme. See, that's an outlier. Stetson Bennett being 25 and playing college football right now, that is not an outlier. Not outside of the one place that it kind of is normal. Now, when I say in three more years, this will work itself out, that's because you've only used 1 year so far, 23, 24, 25. Okay, now I'm out of eligibility, minus a medical redshirt or something. And so by the spring of 2026, the math involved for the coaches will have finally forcibly worked itself out. But until then, now, Chuck, why are you bringing this up? What do you think of this? Folks, this is not 30 years old versus 25 years old in the NFL. There are so many cases. They're both grown men. There are so many cases of grown men running around college football right now, physically at a place almost no 18 or 19-year-old can attain. That can be a monster difference in a game or a season. And simply aging isn't supposed to be like a cinder block on the scale. A team improving versus the previous season should be about so many other elements than that. It should be about so much more than I've got a bunch of 24 and 25-year-old grown men on this team. Do we know BYU, Brigham Young? We know they won a national championship in 1984, right? BYU won a national championship in modern days. The Cougars today, they play a challenging national schedule virtually every year. And for the most part, do you know what BYU is on a season-in, season-out basis? They're dangerous to just about almost every Saturday you look at BYU and go, they're good enough that they could probably win today. That's dangerous, folks. Guess how? Do you know who Robert Anai is? Dan, you know, Rob, he was at Syracuse, but he's been around. He just got hired. Dave Doran hired him. Robert Anai is the newly hired OC at North Carolina State. I mentioned BYU won a national championship. Robert Anai started on the offensive line on BYU's national championship team. The night they beat Michigan for the title, dude was 26 years old playing offensive line in a college football game. I call that an advantage on the line of scrimmage and one that, tough for any five-star, legit, I mean bad dude, 18-year-old to overcome. You look across the line of scrimmage, what were you? They played Michigan that night. Well, I'm at Michigan. I was a five-star. What are you? I'm 26. Oh. College football right now is the same as if every school started its own religion and could send players away for a year or 2 years or whatever. And for at least three more seasons can run fully grown adults on the field versus teenagers, and that's not what the game is supposed to be. Now, understand, against the backdrop of all this, I'm giving you the end of the spectrum with Brigham Young. And simply having 24, 25, 26-year-old players on the roster doesn't guarantee you national championships, because I said in 1984, it was one national title. They weren't Miami. They didn't win five. But on that year's team, I'm sorry, you got a 26-year-old guard? Yeah, advantage. So there are extreme cases you can look at, and it sort of makes the point. Well, okay, if it makes the point then, how does it not make the point now? Now, here's the thing, and I'm not complaining about Brigham Young in particular. I'm saying that what they are right now, that if you've ever thought about that or heard a conversation about that, folks, every word anyone's ever mentioned about BYU and that, it applies to every other school in the sport now. And that is a tough, tough go for the next three seasons.
Now back back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football on Chuck Oliver Show. And I was mentioning something yesterday, begs kind of fleshing out because I just did kind of a flyover. Way back in the day, I was doing Conference USA games on Comcast, CSS, and we had UCF, and I minded the trip to Orlando, so whatever, we'll go to UCF some. Well, there was a kid coming out of Miami, and I mean like high school, Miami Central down there, and by the time his senior year was done, he was the leading passer in Dade County history. He was Mr. Florida and had broken all the records, everything. And he went to UCF, played quarterback as a freshman. The reason he went to UCF is because Jimbo Fisher, who had given him a scholarship offer, looked at Jeff Godfrey at the very end and was like, I cannot give a scholarship to a guy who's 5'10 to play quarterback. I'm so sorry. I can't. And Jeff Godfrey's like, cool, UCF, here I come, Conference USA Freshman of the Year. There are measuring sticks and there are standards. Then there are ball players. I don't know. Stetson Bennett's a ball player. That is my opinion. I want to welcome on right now a guy who can comment on all of that. There is a difference between being a Saturday guy and a Sunday guy. And for a lot of players, Saturday is where it ends, and it's fantastic. That's possibly the case with Stetson Bennett. I want to bring on a guy who has coached him personally from QB country. It's his deal. It's David Morris. How you doing, brother?
Hey, I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Let's talk about the bias of the stopwatch or the measuring tape or whatever else, because, I mean, I asked somebody yesterday when you eyeballed Stetson Bennett the first time, what did you think? And it was at a camp, and he was like, he's 5'10", man. We can't do – he's like – and then after the camp, it was right into Bolsey. He said, we watched him at the camp, and we were like, he might be as talented, skilled, et cetera, as quarterback, any quarterback here. What was your experience with Stetson the first time?
Yeah, and first of all, I think there's some bad information out there. He's not 5'10". I mean, he's every bit of 5'11 and a half, maybe 6 foot. It's just interesting. Like, okay, yeah, he's not 6'3", but he's also not 5'10". And mm-hmm. Not just you, Chuck, right? Like that was.
I was referencing Jeff Godfrey, by the way.
Yeah. Oh no, I know. Yeah. And so, but there was even on the ESPN. Game on the live television or not, they're like, he's 5'10". I'm like, man, nope. he's not, so it's like, so I think there's some bias there. But the first time I saw him was probably 4 years ago and, here in Mobile. And, I think he was, going into the season is from backup at the time. He has kind of just gotten back, and it was just kind of around when all the shuffle was going on around there with Fields and all that. And so didn't know a whole lot about him other than that he was a really good high school player. And the first time I saw him, I was like, okay, not a big guy, but I wasn't either. And so like I wasn't like, oh, that's too bad. He's not 6'3". I was more just like, okay, can he throw it? And man, he can really throw it, and he can throw it as good as anybody in the SEC, And so the first time I saw him, there's some stuff you got to clean up, and you want to give him some stuff to work on and all that, but I was impressed just as a thrower, and then you could tell just the way he walks around and the way he thinks and talks, like the guy has a ton of confidence in what he does, and I think that it ultimately. Besides his maturity and patience and just kind of playing the long game is the thing that stood out to me initially.
Let's talk about the physical skills, because a lot of times, and again, this is bias, we just build it in. We see a kid who doesn't have prototypical size and we go straight to the smarts and leadership and experience and all that. No, talk about his physical skills. He can move when he runs the ball and he is accurate. He can throw the deep ball. Just if you describe what Stetson's physical skills are, leaving out the height and everything else.
Yeah. Geez Louise, he's an incredible athlete. He has a real twitch about him that I think's rare. And, you could say he's as twitchy of a thrower as a Drew Brees. And honestly, he's more compact than Drew Brees was coming out of college. Now Drew got better and better and better. In the league, but as a passer, I think he's a Drew Brees type passer. He doesn't lack arm strength at all. He can throw it with anybody. Now, there's going to be some Josh Allens and maybe Levis and Richardson, you know, in this year's draft can, you know, just throw it harder and further. But, like, they're also not nearly as accurate, and it's not even close. And so, you know, I just think that, you know, what do you want in a passer? You want an anticipator, you want an accurate guy, and you want a guy who's consistent. And that's what he is. And, you know, in fact, you know, basically he led the SEC and completion percentage this year and kind of, you know, did the same thing he did last year from a touchdown interception ratio for the most part. And so, it, you know, he's over 4-to-1 touchdown interception ratio. You know, he gets 4 percentage points on his completion percentage. And you know, just look at it last week or 2 weeks ago or any at any point in this season, and you're like, whoa. I mean, there's just throws that he's making that are incredible. And, you know, just from a motion standpoint, he has some Aaron Rodgers type stuff to him from a throwing standpoint. Now, he has to gain weight. I do think his speed and his quickness is an asset and a differentiator, but, you know, in order to run a little bit in the league, you got to, you know, be able to take those hits. But I mean, he did in the SEC. So I think that these people that are evaluating are just outsmarting themselves or overthinking it. The kid's really a good player.
Well, David, always appreciate your time. It's a lot easier for fans. You know, we look and we see somebody who looks like KJ Jefferson, and we're like, okay, I get that. And that's another guy you work with. I make you a promise. Next time we'll talk about KJ Jefferson, we'll talk about size. It'll be good, okay? It'll be like in a good way.
Yeah, all good, Chuck.
All right, David, appreciate your time, brother. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
From Mobile, QB Country, it's David Morris. And, yeah, he's got the bona fides. And we've had him on, you know, enough that I think most people, if you don't know David, played at Ole Miss as a quarterback in the same class, I guess, redshirted. And then he and Eli kind of went along together. And he said, you know, I wasn't the biggest guy in the world. And I was also on the depth chart the same as Eli. So he wasn't going to play a lot. And this was not portal time, or else he might have gone to, I don't know, Northwestern State or somewhere and play ball. But he's a quarterback coach and guru and counselor and whisperer. And man, does he have an awesome list of clients. And Stetson Bennett is the latest.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
I have long espoused on this show that I just pick an example here. Pat Forty said, that's not a topic, folks. Pete Thamel said, that's not a topic. But when we look at the Alabama-Georgia, I guess, rivalry or jockeying for first overall position in college football, I saw the other day, not only the Paul Feinbaum had said Kirby Smart and Georgia have replaced Nick Saban and Bama topped the college football world. I saw that. I saw that Stephen A. Smith apparently, like, popped a ventricle on it. It's not like Feinbaum said, hey, you know, I'm ranking all the teams. Is it Bama UTEP or UTEP Bama? I'm a little stuck. No, he said that Georgia is the most dominant program in the sport. Well, if they are, that means nobody else is. All right, water's wet. I didn't understand the provocative nature of the, maybe I'm doing it wrong. Dan, I need to just start yelling really loud, right? I didn't understand that was a provocative statement. Kirby has built a monster in Athens, and they're as powerful as any program in college sports right now, as far as I know. I want to welcome on right now, guy I have missed, lead SEC columnist, College Football News. You've seen him ESPN, Fox Sports, heard him on Sirius. It's Russ Mitchell. Mi amigo, how you been?
Been snorkeling in Thailand before the playoffs.
What did you see?
Water.
Well, you saw things swimming around and breathing underwater, though, right?
No. My idea of snorkeling, in fact, I'll send you a picture. My wife got this great picture. Everybody's snorkeling with their heads down and their little things sticking up in the air. And she turns to me and I'm like 270 pounds floating with my hands under my arms, eyes closed, looking at the sky.
You're sunbathing. Man,
I know what the fish look like. I don't need to see the fish. I know what they look like.
You know, I will see it when you bread it and fry it. I will see what the fish looks like.
Thank you.
All right. Let's talk about, first of all, and we'll talk Bama and Georgia, but I want to start with Georgia. I don't believe it's a provocative stance to have at all. The only wonder is how quickly Kirby got it done. By year two, they're playing for the big, ugly trophy. Give me your take on where Kirby is right now in the college football world.
Yeah, but they weren't dominant then.
No.
I mean, they came through and they did well. Now they are by far the best team in college football. He's put together the best infrastructure, the best organization. And I know most Georgia fans, probably one side of them wants to hear this and the other side says, shut up. But, you know, Kirby's 47, right? I mean, 47. You don't need to go to Thailand and lie in the ocean when you're 47. You're still young. You know, Nick is 107. He's got a good barber. That's what Nick's got, right? His hair is not black. It's gray. And, you know, I'll tell you, going back to 2014 and 2015, we said as much on your show. There are teams that are important in college football that they do well. USC, Texas, Notre Dame, Alabama, and Georgia. When teams like that are doing well, we all eat steak, all of us, that have anything to do in college football. And Mark Richt is one of the loveliest men I've ever met in my life. He is such a nice person. I have so many tangential Mark Richt stories that I could tell. And he was a great recruiter. While he was at Georgia, Georgia almost always had top 10 recruiting class.
Yep.
In fact, I think the worst recruiting class they ever had was 12, right, in these hypothetical recruiting
standings.
They were
always really good.
Yeah. And you know what his record from 2017 through the last year in 2015, what Mark Richt's record was against teams that finished the SEC above 500?
What's that?
Had 7 or 8 wins from 2007 to 2015 against teams in the SEC that just finished over 500, just over 4-4. That's not what Kirby has built. Kirby's come in and built a program, and it's not just about stocking it with players. Mark stocked it with players. It's about having that focus and that ability to put your foot on your opponent's throat and choke them out. And that is what Kirby has built at Georgia. And that is why it's not about having a poor schedule heading into 2023. Some years you have poor schedules, some years you have tough schedules. Same with Alabama, but still, they win every year, and it's because of the infrastructure and the coaching staff and everything around the program, and that's what Kirby's built.
Heck of a comment from Coach Dykes after the game. There's a comment, a phrase I say, they don't do the same things. Like, you know, we're not trying to – like, Kansas isn't trying to do the same things as Oklahoma, you know, not really. After the game, TCU head coach, they just played for a national championship. He said, yeah, we don't really do the same thing as them. They're in a different tier.
Yeah.
Let's flip it across the field or across the conference, I guess. And this is, I go bird's eye. So this is satellite image. Where is Alabama as a program right now? Because I will say, if you want to be strict and legalistic, they are in decline. they're in decline from their standards. But really, really good, that's not what Tuscaloosa's been about for about a decade and a half. Where are they?
Yeah, I mean, they lost two games on the road. They barely lost to Tennessee on a field goal, and the Tigers in a place that they call Death Valley. You don't get to put Death Valley on your stadium and not get laughed out of the place unless it's really a tough place to play, you know? Now, they're replacing their quarterback, which but Georgia's doing that too, and Alabama. Look, the hardest thing to do is to continue winning when you're winning because people get a sense of entitlement, right? Nick, it's not like he's become a fuzzy, happy guy. You know, he's still the same. You know, you can put whatever word you want into right there, but this is a family show. You know, he's still the same taskmaster that he's always been. And they've recruited just as well as Georgia, and they're not going anywhere. So, no, there's just now two big cats. There's not just one big cat. There's two. And the East is still slightly easier to play in than the West.
LSU's part of that. Talk Brian Kelly and this past season. I'm trying to lead you anywhere, obviously. You got your own opinions. I looked at this LSU team, and the disappointment at the end, I was like, no, I don't think LSU was quite as good when we decided they were really, really good. I was like, I think they kind of, if you just closed your eyes and looked up at the end, I was like, all right, that's probably representative of where they were in this transition year. What do you see?
Well, you know, the two biggest surprises in maybe all of college football were LSU and A&M. And they just basically flipped it. It goes to show you, you know, people have talked a lot about the NIL and what it means and whether does it level the playing field? Does it open the door for teams like Georgia and Alabama? And, you know, there's still a lot to be said about leadership and, you know, having those kids. And LSU's got that with Kelly. Kelly has won everywhere he's ever been in his life. You know, and if you can win a national championship with Les Miles and Orgeron and Baton Rouge, you can absolutely win a national championship with Kelly. So, you know, if you're a Georgia fan, lace your boots. I told LSU fans after 2019, that was a unique season, and don't expect games like – what was the final in 19, the LSU-Georgia game? I think it was like 25, right, or 26-point difference.
Yeah. They put half a 100 up.
Yeah, that's not happening again. And I would tell all Georgia fans, don't think you'll get another game against LSU like you did this year at the championship game. You know, the Tigers are absolutely back, had a great recruiting class. Daniels looked great, and Nussmeier looks good behind him. So, you know, I really like what they're building there. And they had a great recruiting class and then hit the portal very well and filled in all the weaknesses that they had, the lack of depth on the defensive line. So, look, I wouldn't at all be surprised to see LSU playing Georgia again in December.
Flip it over back to the East. I want to ask you about just a couple of contenders quickly and let you go. Tell me the permanence you think, or the consistency at least. Permanence is a stronger word than ever in college football. Give me maybe the consistency that Vols fans can expect.
Well, they got a good coach, a good system. I'm very high. Actually, I'm high on the East right now. I'm long on the East. I love what they're building in South Carolina. I think it's harder to win there, obviously, than, you know, in a lot, lots of different places. Because Tennessee, you got to be able to recruit because they don't even have the high school talent that South Carolina can dig into. And I love what they're building in Florida. So I think the entire conference is on the upswing. Led by Georgia, I think all of the SEC is going to maximize the national, the new NIL, and you're going to see it starting with the East. So starting with Tennessee, I think it's interesting when I think about games that I was most disappointed in this year. Obviously, the national championship. I really expected a little bit more out of TCU in that game. But you could see just standing next to them, there was such a difference.
Oh, yeah.
But the Tennessee game was another one. You know, maybe as a Georgia fan, you smile. But I was really hoping to see more out of that game. I don't think the next time you see them all up in Nashville, they will have learned a lot from that game they played last season.
Russ, it's always good to catch up, amigo. We will do it again at some point later in this season, okay?
We will definitely do it. We'll get together at SEC Media Days, and then I'll take you snorkeling with me, and then we'll hit the season.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon, brother.
Later, brother.
Russ Mitchell, always love his time, again, Fox and Sirius and et cetera. So, yeah, and he covered the other one. I was going to ask him about Florida as well. Florida is hard for me to, because I have a lot of faith in Billy Napier. I need to just look up and say, all right, who came in the portal? That's kind of where I am. Now, there are a lot of other programs you can say the same thing. With Napier, I'm looking, I was like, so what exactly happened in 2022 in Gainesville? Like, what exactly did we get out of this? Well, we set things in place, and you set things in place for Brenton Cox, and he's gone. And didn't he make it through the season? You set things in place for Anthony Richardson, and he's like, peace, Anthony out. You got things in place for Justin Shorter? And by the way, this is no failing at all, not within 100 miles. I'm the biggest Billy Napier guy in this town. No failing at all of Billy Napier. It's the roster whack-a-mole that he is getting to participate in. And when you, as a coach, sometimes you run players off on purpose. Sometimes you run players off just because that's kind of how you are. Think Brian Harsin at Auburn. What'd he do? He tried to run some players off. Some other players felt like, hey, he's trying to run me off. And if you got Brian Harsin to be transparent, he's like, no, I needed that guy. Sometimes it happens. So he's had, and so that's everywhere. But Billy Napier, I have a lot of faith in his ability to add players both from high school and the portal, but I need to see who those players are. I don't know who the quarterback – well, yeah, I do. But I want to see that play out in spring as well. Because I need to see productivity from that position. Well, I was a five-star in Florida, and I was a four-star in Wisconsin, and I don't care. Don't care. I need to see production. And, like, maybe in 2023. What? It's year two for him. I understand that. Billy Napier to be such a buttoned-up planner, executive, delegate, all of this stuff. He's both hands-on and he's an organizer. And he's got a track record, and there was a reason he kept being kind of, putting it off. And the head coach at Louisiana Lafayette could say, okay, now I'm ready to jump into the SEC, and I'll go to that program. There's a reason for all of it, like a lot of reasons. And against the backdrop of what college football is today, which is what I opened the show with, it's no complaints because everybody has to navigate the same waters. But it has made this specific task that we were talking about with Russ, building your roster. Okay, how's the roster going to look? I'm supposed to have a better idea on January 11th, especially after the early signing period came to be. When the early signing period came to be on January 11th, prior to, was it 17 or 18? Whatever the year, the first early signing period. But prior to that, January 11th, hey, what's the roster going to look like for the coming year? Well, there's still a couple of five-stars or three-stars or two-stars we're recruiting, but I think it's going to be this. After the early signing period came, if you're a top 20 program, after the early signing, what do we look like January 11th? Well, because of what happened 3 weeks ago, we're kind of wrapped up now, so this is what I expect. It's January 11th. Chuck, what do you think Florida will look like? I ain't got a clue. I have no idea how many kids they'll have on scholarship week one. They'll send 11 out there. I know that. But it's the backdrop of what every coach at every program, every conference has to try to overcome. And I don't know how that's going to look in Gainesville. So I was going to ask Russ about that, but he got there. All right, we're going to break. We will come back hour one on a Wednesday. Be in the books next.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
They deserve to be in that game. They just got outmatched by the best team in the country. So this shouldn't be a diss on TCU. This shouldn't be a bashing of the Horned Frogs. This would be just more of a celebration of this Georgia team is just unbelievable.
Aaron Murray, former Georgia quarterback, and ESPN's Aaron Murray. And he is talking about the matchup that we all saw the other day and the 65-7 finale and saying, let's not bash the Horned Frogs. I think the first part of that statement was, they're not supposed to be in this game anyway. They really weren't. They weren't supposed to be in the conference championship game, much less the national championship game. They weren't supposed to be in the semifinal. They weren't supposed to be playing really interesting football in the month of November. That's true, folks. Their season, it was supposed to be beyond intrigue. A bowl game? Well, sure. I mean, it's modern days. There's something out there for you if you can, you know, kind of muster XYZ. So we assume that. But for TCU, when I say let's have interesting November football, when you're picked last in your conference and you have a November schedule against Texas, Baylor, and Iowa State, that's supposed to be real intriguing. Those are three teams way better than you. And so the intrigue is supposed to be, hey, we better get our six wins before we hit that stretch. Instead, it wasn't a three-game stretch. It was a three-game stretch of beating Texas in Austin, beating Baylor in Waco, beating Iowa State 62-14. It wasn't a three-game stretch. It was winning those three games and then the fourth game going to play for the Big 12 Conference Championship against Kansas State. So I agree with Aaron Murray there. Again, you don't have to beat up on TCU. They really weren't supposed to be there. Now, represent – this separate statement – represent yourself. You got – there's no sport quite like wrestling, and I've talked about that before. And I coached wrestling when I was coaching high school football. I'd take all the linemen after the season, then we go and I'd coach, you know, heavyweight or unlimited, whatever they call it at the time. Worst thing that would happen is window shopping, man. When the opponent would come in and you'd have the 125 or the 147 or the 171 looking over there going, oh, my gosh. I'm like, what are you doing? You just lost. What are you doing? That was TCU the other night, wasn't it? Did you see the game official with the coin toss? It looked like the guy was about to pop a vein. He was so nervous. I was like, I think he's nervous. And then I saw Max Duggan about 5 minutes later on the opening possession. I said, oh, it's catching. Dan, how was your Wednesday? Welcome back, by the way. Hashtag frequent flyer miles.
Very much. Yeah, it was a fun time out there in L.A.
We're in Atlanta. We sent you to L.A. Dan saw New York.
Yeah, I did. I did. I saw New York, saw Hollywood. I mean, it was pretty much all over the place. Everything short of, hey, kids, look, there's Parliament. But, you know, expansion, I'm sure, could probably come soon enough. So stay tuned for that one. You know, the funny thing is we played earlier Kirby talking about, you know, Stetson Bennett leaving and the sadness that is that now he is gone. But he also had talked about his hardest coaching job is now about to begin. And a lot of people usually look at it and say, oh, man, you just did what you did last season. You got all these guys coming back. It is setting up. It is going to be everything in the right direction where this program is going to pick up and be able to move this thing forward. But the problem is sometimes is that is usually and can be the worst thing for you. Is because he even touched on it where he said last year we lost so many guys. So there were a lot of guys out there who said, I got to prove myself. I haven't done anything yet. N'Kobe Dean did that. Quay Walker did that. You know, Channing Tindall, all these other players, they did all those things. I haven't done any of those things. The program I'm talking about right now is Florida State because they are about to be back in territory that at one time was not uncharted for them, but for this current group, it is, and that is incredibly high expectations because I think they've had expectations to be able to get back into competition in the ACC. They've checked that box now. Now it's going to be probably next year when I'm talking with you from Charlotte at ACC kickoff and you're at SEC Media Days and we're talking about preseason expectations for certain programs. Florida State is going to be looked at as a team that's an odds-on favorite to win the ACC and be in the college football playoff. And again, when you haven't been through all of those things before and what's expected of you to reach those points, sometimes it can be tough because you can have some guys in that building that say, hey, we got everybody back. We good.
Yeah, and that is, you know, there's something I've talked about, my 43-page document of half topics. I've got on there a half-developed topic that the term returning starters, it has never had less value in college football.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.